This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. The idea of the American dream is a core part of our national identity. Starting with nothing and working your way up, that's what many of us believe it means to be an American. But that idea has always been complicated, as Aarti Shahani can tell you. Shahani may be very familiar to you. She's an NPR correspondent based in Silicon Valley, and she is frequently heard on All Things Considered and Morning Edition. But you may not know that Shahani is an immigrant from Morocco who moved to the U.S. as a young child. And while she believes she is living the American dream, her father lived the American nightmare. In her new book, Here We Are, she shares her family's journey coming to America, their struggles, and their triumphs. Shahani will join me on stage this Sunday at Centennial Hall in the Milwaukee Public Library. But first, she joins me by phone. Aarti, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
So, you know, from the very beginning of this book, it's pretty clear it's not going to be this fairy tale retelling of coming to America. I was still surprised by so much of it. How it speaks to both the American ethos and then roundly contradicts it. So how did the Shahanis end up in Flushing?
Yeah, I mean, the fact is the Shahanis, my family, we had a lot of ups and downs, and that's what I write about in Here We Are, American Dreams, American Nightmares. We ended up in Queens. My parents came to America, really leaving a very uncomfortable family situation back home. And this is something I knew nothing about until I began writing my memoir and interviewing people, including my mom. My mom is one of the most resilient human beings I have ever met in my entire life. She is full of energy. She is the hub of any community she steps into. And mom told me she actually tried to take her own life because things got so bad back home. And she was not successful, meaning she recovered. And my father agreed to leave his family, which was quite abusive to her, and try our hands in America. So we came here, we overstayed tourist visas, and, you know, I grew up undocumented for a while.
Yeah, and that's something that, of course, comes up later in the book as well. But, you know, as you say, there were so many layers to your family's journey here. And yet, you know, you were able to, in some ways, I think, live what people believe is the American dream.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, what happened with my family is we managed to get our papers, and then we thought we were all on the path to the American dream. I became a scholarship kid at a very fancy private school in Manhattan. It was actually like a block away from the mayor's house, and Donald Trump's daughter, went to the private school across the street from mine. My father, he was achieving his dream. He opened up his own electronics store on 28th Street and Broadway in Manhattan. He became a shopkeeper running his own business, his own small business, on the very same block where a decade earlier he was shoveling snow for $4 an hour. So we were both on that path. And then what happened, the real turning point for my family, is when I was a teenager, my father was arrested for selling watches and calculators to the Cali drug cartel. He was taken to Rikers Island, a prison in New York City that's really rough, and he was told, hey, Mr. Shahani, plead guilty. If you plead guilty, if you take an 8-month sentence, you can put this whole matter behind you. And if you go to trial, a lot of people don't know this about how the criminal justice system works, if you go to trial, you face what's called a trial penalty. So you could have to serve, you know, a decade instead of 8 months because you exercised your constitutional right. So dad agreed to plead guilty, and the 8-month sentence ended up spiraling into a 14-year legal ordeal that destroyed his life and singularly defined my life. And that's really where the title comes from, the subtitle, I should say, American Dreams, American Nightmares. My thesis about America is that the two are real, they coexist. I have lived the dream. My father absolutely lived the nightmare. And that duality is something that my family struggled with and this country struggles with.
I mean, the case against him was in some ways a little bizarre as you're reading through it. Can Can you explain exactly what happened?
Sure. My father and his little brother ran a wholesale electronics store. So they were selling watches and calculators to people who wanted to buy watches and calculators. Now, this was before the days of Amazon and online sales and even big box retailers. And so it was a small store. Now, it turns out that among their clients, there were members, allegedly members, of the Cali drug cartel. It's a very notorious drug cartel. I remember when my dad was first arrested. You know, I grew up wanting to be a prosecutor because I, you know, my family, we definitely had the working class, poor welcome to America. You know, we lived in a one bedroom, totally roach infested spot in Queens. And my mom put a lot of effort into cleaning up our building and making sure drug dealers were not trying to sell to kids and doing that kind of thing. And so to be a teenager and to hear that my dad was being accused of working with a cartel, like, I was devastated and ashamed because I thought one day I wanted to prosecute people like that. And what I'll say is that over the years, when I stopped feeling just the shame and the rage, and I opened up my eyes and ears to what was actually happening in that case, what I came to learn is that my father was basically an honest guy who, at worst, made a mistake, but didn't really mean harm by it. His store was not a front for a cartel. He got swept up in the war on drugs. Prosecutors were looking for a quick conviction. He was an easy target. And mind you, this is not my analysis. This is what I learned when I went back and I spoke to the judge who actually hit the gavel in my father's case.
That moment in the book, and it comes early in the book, The longer you read, you realize just how incredible that scene really was. What was it like talking to that man?
I did not know before that meeting that I was dealing with trauma. I had no idea, because what happened, I should just explain, is that after my father served a sentence, he was taken into deportation. And my family became not only targets in the war on drugs, but at the front end of the new mass deportation system in America that was actually reined in under President Bill Clinton in the 90s. Anyway, long story short, as you mentioned, I opened the book, Here We Are, talking about this very chance encounter. I now live a kind of fancy life. I'm a correspondent for NPR. People take my call who never would have given me the time of day before. And it turns out that I befriended and got to know the man who ran the jail where Dad was locked up. He happened to be friends with the judge who hit the gavel. The jailer offered to introduce me to the judge. The judge invited me into his chambers. I agreed to go. I didn't know why I was going. I had no idea why I was going to see that judge, but, you know, curiosity. I went to visit him in Queens, and he told me straight out the gate, first words out of his mouth, your father and your uncle should never have taken that guilty plea. What a mistake. And I got to tell you, I feel like the legs were knocked out from under me. I was woozy. I felt like I just turned into jello. I needed to take a seat. I was trying to hold myself together. I was trying to look strong. I was trying to be empowered, journalistic, whatever, artsy. And inside, I just wanted to break. And, you know, usually when you're having an interesting meeting with someone, as a journalist, you want to stay and you want to talk to them and you want to get more information. I just wanted to get the hell out of his office. I just wanted to run out of there as fast as I could. And finally, when he let me go, and he was being kind, generous, he was trying to talk to me, but I wanted to leave. When he let me go, literally, his door closed. I was walking down the hallway, and the tears just started flooding down my face. And I have to say, I'm not sure that I made it clear in the book, that meeting with the judge, what he told me about how that plea deal that Dad agreed to was a mistake, that's something I was never able to tell my father. And I couldn't tell it to him because I knew how much it hurt me to know that our lives were destroyed over something that people facing the system do day in and day out, which is to take that plea. And I didn't want my father to feel the pain that I had felt in that moment.
I mean, that's understandable. I can't imagine how that felt, hearing that. Mm-hmm. As you said, not only was this something that destroyed his business, but it was also something that set off this huge legal battle over deportation. Mm-hmm. It's truly shocking. Your book points this out, how opaque the deportation process can be. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, it was crazy. I mean, like, you know, I'd wanted to be a lawyer since I was a little kid, and I had this notion of the American justice system and our rights. And, you know, the deportation system, it's technically a civil, not a criminal proceeding. So even though, for example, the immigration authorities like to talk in the media about apprehending criminal aliens and this and that, what they're not saying is that everyone they pick up has already served their time in a regular criminal justice system. Deportation is a second and often a surprise punishment, as it was for my family. My father was not the first in my family to be picked up for deportation. His little brother, my uncle, was the first because they were in the same case together, running the same business. The day that my uncle was taken from his prison sentence into immigration custody, no one told us he was going to be taken, and we had no idea it was going to happen. He had a green card, as did Dad. Their family members were all by then green card holders or U.S. citizens. My uncle ended up going missing for 4 days. We had no idea where he was. We thought we were going to have a homecoming party. It turned into a search party. My cousin was running up and down a highway looking for his father's body. It was nuts what happened. And this is the kind of inhumanity that this system runs with. And by now, it's touched millions of lives. I mean, you know, we have heard of mass deportations in the past in U.S. history, but what is distinct about this moment, as compared to other historical moments in America, is we have never before had an agency whose sole job is the constant identification of long-term residents, people who have been here for years and years and years, who have kids born in this country, finding those people and weeding them out. You know, there's no line to stand on to get your green card anymore. That line has effectively been cut off for most people. But man, there is buses and buses and buses waiting to pull you out and kick you out, even when you've got kids born here. So I have to say that my family's story, what my father, what my uncle went through, it was really a lesson for me in civics and what this country is and isn't. And there's also, I would want to just point out a dual point to this. The legal system is wretched. It is not fair. It is destroying families. It is destroying homes. Judges are not allowed to judge. Prosecutors pick people up and toss them out without a fair hearing. That is how the system is operating. It's been operating. I'm not the only one saying it. Republicans and Democrats have both said this. But I ended up fighting for my father, okay? I ended up fighting for a decade for my father to stay in this country. And what fueled me, as bad as the laws were, what fueled me was the certainty that we are American. And that certainty in my soul, which I got from my culture, my neighbors, my teachers, my friends, that to me is actually the truth of this country.
Yeah. You know, one of the quotes that really struck me from your book, it was actually about partition. Quote, "The lines were drawn with objectivity, modernities, religion, the Western cult of judgment without empathy." Mm-hmm. And as read through the book, you know, this quote kept coming back to me. And as journalists, I think we feel that objectivity is so central to what we do. But it seems like for you, for maybe most of us, that's never really a choice.
Mm-hmm. You know, Joy, I really appreciate you bringing that up. And I hadn't really thought about that connection until you said it. But yeah, I mean, my parents were effectively stateless people running around the world trying to find a home since Britain left India. That was their fate, to sort of be part of a massive pool of human beings uprooted and searching for a place and, you know, villainized along the way, as immigrants, migrants are. And it's interesting because in journalism, we have this notion that our job is to be objective, kind of like the Brits had this notion that they could objectively divide a country without really knowing it, and that distance somehow would be a competitive advantage in being fair. And the fact is, no human being is objective, okay? By our very nature, and religion teaches us this too, we have biases, we have blind spots, we have passions. And I would hope that what we can strive to do simply is to be more self-aware and to admit, no, actually, we're not objective, but we bring who we are to any table we sit at, you know? And that's what I strive to do also in this book, is really being self-aware as a daughter, now as a journalist, as an adult, as a woman whose father suffered tremendously and family suffered tremendously in the process, but also as a woman who has gotten to have, frankly, a fantastic life, to just bring constant self-awareness to the things that have come at us, you know?
Well, Aarti Shahani, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Joy, it has been a joy. I'm not sure if someone said that to you before, but thank you for taking the time.
Aarti Shahani is an NPR reporter based in Silicon Valley. Her new book is called Here We Are, American Dreams, American Nightmares. Shahani will join me on stage this Sunday at Centennial Hall in the Milwaukee Public Library. You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at WUWM.com.